Thank you.
There
So
you are.
welcome everybody to the Braille Buzz. I had this wonderful introduction, which we will dispense with now. I wanted to invite our president, Miss Denise Colley, to say a few words to us before we get started. And we have lots to get done. So I am looking forward to getting started with our four components tonight. Miss Denise.
Thank you, Paul. And I just want to welcome everybody here again tonight to our bi-monthly Braille Buzz. Hopefully, those of you who have been on the call before are anticipating another really great call. If you've never joined us before, I hope that you'll sit back, relax, and enjoy this wonderful show that's been program that's been put together. We're going to be talking about some exciting things tonight, to include our convention program, this summer convention. So we'll be doing that at the end of the program. So welcome again, everyone. And Paul, back to you.
Thank you. And Sheila, one of the things I asked in my glorious introduction, which everybody got the opportunity to think about but not hear, is I asked if you could tell us how many participants we have. So the first item on our program is one that I'm excited about, and I know there's at least one person with us who shares some memories. I hope there are some others. Over the past couple of months, we lost an individual who was absolutely crucial in the development of Braille technology. He's a gentleman whose name was David Holliday, and he was married to a blind lady whose name was Karen Navy, and they both lived in Wisconsin. And in the early 1980s, I don't think there was a person who was more valuable or more important in the evolution of access technology than David Holliday. He
I'm
did
sorry,
two
Paul, there's
things.
34. So
Thank you.
I apologize.
You're good. He did two things that were absolutely wonderful. The first thing that he did was to develop the very first word processor specifically designed for use by blind people that would work on Apple computers. And a lot of us had begun our joyous journey into access technology on TRS-80 computers, but absolutely found that when the Apple came along, in particular, the Apple IIe, it was a much better device in terms of speech and in terms of ease of use and so on. So when David Holliday developed a program called Braille Edit that enabled us to actually word process like everybody else, it was like the world had changed in an amazing way. The second thing that he did was to develop a Braille translation program called Braille Dots, which some of you may know about. And Braille Dots was a relatively easy program to learn. It was certainly the one that most of us who didn't have the money in those days to afford to buy the Duxbury program found ourselves buying, because it was about, oh, I want to say a third or a quarter of the price of the Duxbury programs. So the Duxbury programs were for all of those folks who could afford them, but Megadots, as it eventually became, was the program that many of us used. But David Holliday also ran an access technology newsletter, and this was called the Raise Dot Computing Newsletter. It wasn't a very exciting title, but the newsletter was wonderful, and piles of us young kids absolutely tried everything we could do in order to get published in the Raise Dot Computing newsletter, because it was kind of a sign that you were a together person if you could actually get published there. And I think I had one or two small articles in the Raise Dot Computing newsletter, and I thought I'd died and gone to heaven. I was so excited. But the other thing, and the last thing that I'm going to talk about is that David was very, very active in the American Council of the Blind. Many of you are used to the ACB newspaper, but the ACB newspaper was originally developed and originally printed in David Holliday's hotel room. And the very first newspapers were actually produced entirely at the expense of Raise.computing. So ACB and Access Technology owe an awful lot to David Holliday, I think, and I would encourage those people who may have known David or who have some things that they would like to add to say a few words to us. We're not going to spend forever on this stuff, but he deserves our notice and deserves to be honored and deserves to be remembered as, in my opinion, one of the coolest people involved in access technology. So, I don't know if we have any hands, Miss Sheila, but I hope we do.
Roger.
Hi there.
Hey, Roger.
I remember being in David and Karen's room, printing that newsletter at the convention. I was going to bring it up if you didn't. It really was the first ACB convention newsletter. And let's see, I was in the early days, I was kind of close to them. One of the things was that whenever I lived in Washington, D.C. then, and they stayed with us when they had to come to Washington for some reason, which was very nice. I remember one time I was asking what they thought about married people with two different last names. And they said, well, what you really should do is have a last name that represents both of them as a sort of a fusion. They said, for example, our names are Holiday and Navy, so our common last name should be Shoreleave.
Yep. Yep.
They told me also that I was customer number 29.
See, that's about right. I was in the double figures customer list too, Roger. So I can relate to that. And it's amazing how proud that made us feel, because we felt like we were one of the first people who recognized these guys and who valued what they in fact provided to us. The other thing that we should talk about with the Raise.computing newsletter is, and I don't know if you remember this, but David Holliday was the best person in the whole world on April Fool's Day. Every year he would write an April Fool's article, which were and they were all absolutely bizarre, but quite wonderful. And he was a very good writer.
I think the only little thing I wanted to say else is that I wanted to say just a few words about Karen
Please.
too. She has a PhD in mathematics, and so I consider her to be younger and cuter Abraham Nimeth.
Yes.
But she's a very smart lady, and I hope that if she doesn't hear, well, I hope that she'll hear some of what goes on tonight, and that she knows that we want to help her in any way we can,
Right.
and make her feel like we still love her.
Yeah.
And I think all for me for now.
Thank you. And Karen was very much a part of that group. She offered an immense amount of advice to David, and clearly I don't think he would ever have gotten into the business he got into had it not been for the fact that he was married to Karen. And they were a couple for as long as I knew them well, who got along immensely well, or seemed to. So it was pretty amazing. Very good. Do we have any other hands, Miss Sheila?
You do not at the time. It doesn't mean that people don't want to talk. They're just not raising their hands.
So we'll
Oh,
give
you
it
do
one or
have. All right. So let's see. 202, ending in 111. Please tell us who
Yeah,
you
it's
are.
Kathy. It's Kathy
Hey,
Goslin
Kathy.
from Washington, D.C. Hi,
Hey,
Paul.
Kathy.
Hi. I wondered, you said the Braille Edit. Is that related to the Braille Edit Express? Because that's the program I remember growing up, starting when using when I was 11.
Sure. Same. It's a Braille Edit Express was a later iteration of Braille Edit, but it's the same thing.
Yeah, it's great. I don't know what I would have done without it, so I'm very grateful that David Holliday invented that. Thank
For
you.
all kinds of kids in school, that was how kids learned to write and format stuff, because it was really the only game in town, because DOS programs for the most part early on just didn't work. Apple was the game du jour, as it were. But thank you, Kathy.
Thank
All
you.
right, Deborah.
Hey, so I'm going to tell a very different kind of story about David Holliday. I just want to say that I, even though I started with all this around the same time as Paul, I didn't use any Braille translation program early on because early on, those first 5 years or so. Well, I was using a tape base for a Braille, and I was using a Braille and Squeak, and the Braille and Squeak, if you connected it to a Braille embosser, it would just spit out whatever you put in. And
Sure
I
would.
did all my notes and stuff in grade three, and I just connected that because I'm very Braille dependent, and I would just connect that Braille and Squeak to the old Romeo, and it would spit out my grade three notes on cheap paper, and I was good to go. So it was many years before I had a real Braille embosser. But of course, I knew them because you couldn't be in the business of access technology and not know them. And I remember that one of my oldest best friends is Debbie Kent Stein, and she started writing to me in 1981, and we wrote these big long letters to each other. And one of the things that made her happiest was that she had wound up living in this little out of the middle of nowhere town in Pennsylvania. And she had found this wonderful kindred spirit, Karen Navy. So she wrote about Karen all the time. And she and I have been talking some about them lately because she's had lost touch and has such fond memories. But the story, so, and of course, I knew who David was because he did that Raised Dot Computing, which honestly I didn't read because I was doing a magazine. It wasn't a competitor. I
And
mean,
it was a Braille magazine called Tactic, and of course
which is quite a bit.
it was produced by the oh good goodness Clover Nook Printing House
Clever Nook,
in
yeah.
Cincinnati. Yep.
So I probably sometimes shared information with him. I don't remember. But what I want to tell you is just a very human story of kindness, which, well, kindness mixed with brilliance. But so I have a son who's a computer genius, and he was a troubled teenager. And I was with my daughter, who I think at the time she was 21, her brother was 19, and she was at an ACB convention with me, and we started hanging around with Aaron, who used to work for David and Karen. And I can't
Yep.
remember his last name, but anyway, we were spending a lot of time with Aaron, and we started talking about Sean because Sean was so much on our minds, and I'm saying he's so troubled. He doesn't like school, but he's a genius. And when he does stuff, he goes over the top. He almost got kicked out of an exclusive private school at age 14 for writing a computer program that would have brought down the whole school. And but he wrote it just for fun. And Aaron said, "He sounds like me." And I said, "But he loves doing stuff. He wrote a program for me to encrypt every issue of Tactic, and he put it out in Braille. He taught himself Braille in one night to write the instruction manual." And Aaron said, he sounds like me. And then we said, the problem is he won't go to school because all he does is smoke pot. And Aaron said, he sounds like me. So we're like, what can we do to save him? And Aaron said, I think my boss wants to hire him. And sure enough, he went back and told David, and David called Sean, and they put him on a plane to Madison, Wisconsin, and they hired him. And I got to say, he did some brilliant work for them. If anybody ever knew that Sal program, I don't remember what it was called, but anyway, Sean wrote it. And when they merged with Duxbury, they held a spot open for Sean for a year and a half and brought him out there and did apartment hunting and everything. And he did not go because he had fallen in love with Madison, Wisconsin. But they, by hiring him out of nowhere, I feel like, you know, David really saved a kid. And I don't know much about their own family, but, you know, they adopted two children who had various complications. And
I did not know that. So thank you.
Yeah, they did. Yeah. I know one's from India, and I think one is blind and one has other disabilities. And they adopted them late. So those kids are probably 20-ish now.
Yep.
Yeah. So cool. Anyway, I just wanted to throw that in the mix. He wasn't just a computer geek. He was just a really good human being.
I would agree with that. Thank you, Ms. Deborah.
Yeah.
All right, Albert.
Mr. Anderson.
Oh, no. Where'd it go?
Albert?
Am I audible?
You yes, are sir. Audible.
Oh, thank you, thank you, thank you. Oh, goodness. David Holliday. He saw me on the streets of Madison, Wisconsin. I lived there, and he came up and introduced himself, told me some things about what he was doing at the time, and I actually got to go to raise.computing directly and sit at a computer keyboard and kind of get a feel of it, and met Karen. Karen was a guide dog user, perhaps still is, I don't know. But David, I believe, was a diabetic.
I think you're right, Albert.
Yeah, and gosh, and the raise.computing newsletter, I have a memory of his voice reading that. It came out yep. on cassettes.
Sure did, sir.
Came out on cassettes and goodness. And I remember the Megadots manual and that. And I was doing all this before I ever did anything with a computer really at all. But I was just interested in it. And so every now and then I would drop by raise.computing, you know, just to spend time with them and see what was going on. And was sad to lose touch when I moved away and that. But I do have those memories, and I'll never forget them.
Excellent. Albert, thank you so much. Miss Sheila.
Nobody else.
Very good. So I think that Deborah and a couple of other folks are right that we haven't perhaps said enough to enable Karen to know how much she meant to us as well. I spent a lot of very early mornings at breakfasts with David Holliday because I was chair of resolutions and they were getting up to produce the newspaper. And so we tended to meet at 5 or 6 o'clock in the morning. But I both David and Karen, did a tremendous amount in my opinion, to encourage people who are blind to think of themselves as creative and capable and competent. And I think without both of them, we wouldn't be nearly as far along in terms of access technology as we are now. So, David, thank you for all you did. Karen, if there's anything we can do to make things better for you, do let us know. This Braille Buzz will be recorded, so it will be somewhere. And I don't know how to get hold of Karen, but I will try to find out and see that we can get her a copy of what folks have said tonight. So thank you, everyone. I very much appreciate that. I guess the next thing that we want to do is to talk about a process that is very different now, in terms of the way it operates, than it used to be. Last year, resolutions were due on the 15th of April, and so I made the assumption that that was when they were due. It turns out that they're apparently due on the 24th, but I wanted to be certain that the resolutions that were written for Braille, in fact, did get in. So there are three of them. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to go ahead and read all three. And then, after I've done that, I'll open it and see if people have major objections. I'm fine if people want to say they're okay, but don't spend a lot of time. What I really want to hear is if there are people who have real problems, with any of the three resolutions. And one of them is really a Lua resolution, but I think that it's relevant to us as well. So this first resolution has to do with something that I've written an article on that will come out in the next Braille memorandum. But it was a luncheon thing that happened at the leadership conference in Washington, D.C. that I was pretty upset by, which led to the article, but which also led to this resolution. Whereas the leadership of the American Council of the Blind chose to invite a representative from Procter and Gamble to be the featured luncheon speaker at the recent leadership conference held in Virginia. And whereas that presentation unveiled a system for marking products that used lines and shapes, which that company plans to introduce. And whereas the speaker explicitly indicated that Braille was not considered for identifying products because she said that only 10% of people who are blind read Braille. And whereas both the invitation and the presentation constitute, at the very least, a devaluation of Braille by the leadership of the American Council of the Blind. And whereas an article published in the Journal of Visual Impairment and Blindness, which was discussed on ACB's advocacy podcast more than a year ago, clearly indicated that the 10% figure has no basis in reality and should be disregarded. And whereas Braille represents the primary medium of communication for many of ACB's members and for a huge number of people who are blind or have low vision, now therefore be it resolved by the American Council of the Blind that this organization reaffirms our support for Braille and categorically rejects the idea that shapes or other tactile markings can ever constitute an appropriate substitute for Braille for marking anything. And be it further resolved that this organization expects its leaders to consult with special interest affiliates with appropriate expertise before embracing systems such as that proposed by Procter and Gamble, which constitutes a step backward to the period where a variety of systems of tactile identification were competing in the 1920s. And that's the end of the first resolution. Excuse me. So I'm going to maybe go on to the second one. If I'm lucky, here it is. and this resolution, doesn't have a title. So anyway, this is the one that's really the Allure resolution, but I think you guys will figure out what this is, and it's pretty straightforward. And I don't think anybody is going to object to this one. Whereas a number of years ago, the National Library Service decided to acknowledge and agree to a request that the names of authors of articles and authors of books discussed in the New York Times Book Review would be spelled by the readers of that publication. And whereas there are several magazines which incorporate book review components, and whereas Bookmarks constitutes a magazine that consists almost completely of book reviews and lists, now, therefore, be it resolved by the American Council of the Blind that this organization requests that NLS extend the policy begun with the New York Times Book Review and apply it to other publications where there are book reviews, and be it further resolved that this would include at least Bookmarks, Ellery Queen's Mystery Magazine, Analog, Asimov's, The Atlantic Magazine, and the New Yorker. And that's really the end of the resolution. It's really pretty short and pretty straightforward. And so I am going to close that one and go on to...
Paul, you have a hand raised.
Let me finish reading the third one.
Okay.
And then I will recognize that. But keep in your memory who that is, and that person will get to be first, if that's all right, Ms. Sheila. So this resolution,
absolutely.
This resolution has to do with a proposal that BRL is making, and I should say before I read this that so far, you guys are the first official group to hear these resolutions. In theory, in May, the board of BRL can either endorse or throw these resolutions away. But I think that the way that or the attitude that you guys may have with regard to these resolutions will have an impact on what the board will do in May, and this has to do with a task force. So, whereas Braille constitutes the primary medium of communication used by people who are blind for literacy, marking and labeling, playing games, learning mathematics, science, and music, and in a range of other ways, and whereas the National Library Service, NLS, is making electronic Braille displays available to any person in this country with sufficient knowledge of Braille to use it. And whereas the Marrakesh Treaty has created an environment that will potentially make books from all over the world available to people who are blind in this country. And whereas NLS has also introduced a pilot project called Braille On Demand, which allows an individual to request up to 5 books per month that can be kept and need not be returned. And whereas, in spite of all these positive developments, there is an unfounded notion that Braille is becoming increasingly irrelevant. Now, therefore, be it resolved by the American Council of the Blind that this organization reaffirms its support of Braille as an indispensable mode of communication for people who are blind. And be it further resolved that the leadership of this organization is hereby instructed to work in conjunction with its Braille Revival League special interest affiliate to develop and implement strategies, resulting in the creation of a task force of leading organizations of and for people who are blind, who will work with us to promote and expand the use of Braille and to provide accurate information about its relevant and use throughout our country and the world. And be it further resolved that a report of the progress implementing this resolution be presented to the American Council of the Blind Convention in Dallas, Texas in July of 2025. So those are the three resolutions that that we will be taking to the ACB Resolutions Committee. The ACB Resolutions Committee, I am assuming, will be meeting in May and June to consider such resolutions as they receive. I have no idea when their meetings are scheduled or exactly how all of that will work, but I would encourage members of BRL to figure out when our resolutions are being considered and to turn up and hopefully support their adoption by the Resolutions Committee and then eventually their adoption by ACB. So now, Ms. Sheila, the first person who raised his, her, its hand is?
Jane.
Jane.
Okay. Can you hear me? Everyone
yes,
starts
ma'am.
With that. Okay, because it's too long on the Braille display for me to see whether I'm muted or unmuted. I have no problem with any of these. Just one minor clarification, correction, whatever. In the second resolution, in the first whereas clause, it talks about readers. To differentiate, I think you mean the people who are actually reading or narrating the publication for us. You may want to change that to narrators as opposed to the readers who are us who are reading the magazine.
I will do that. That's fine. Thank you,
Jane.
That
was my only glaring, you know, thing.
Yep. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Debbie.
Debbie.
Hello.
Hello.
Oh, those were great stories earlier.
Yes.
The resolutions, they all sound great to me. The first one, did anybody say anything at the time that they presented that? Did they just kind of get the go-ahead to go ahead and do that? Or was there any discussion about it then?
There was no discussion prior to the luncheon. I guess I was there, but I guess my feeling was that there was not really any opportunity for questions or comments. It was just
Even
a presentation.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. I guess, you know, this goes right along with those who attend our BRL board meetings will remember that we wrote a resolution a couple of years ago asking that the leadership of ACB help us to promote Braille and to get the government involved in perhaps writing some regulations that would enable Braille labeling to happen in a similar way that it happens now and has for the last decade in the European Union. And we had folks from ACB come to our BRL board meeting who essentially said manufacturers don't want to use Braille. And I think we probably should have realized then what the attitudes of ACB were going to be. But I think actually inviting somebody to come and present something like this as if it's something that ACB really wants just was a step too far for me.
Oh, yeah. I don't blame you. Wow.
Yep.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Thank you, Miss Debbie.
Yeah.
Roger.
Mr. Peterson.
Hello. I just, as I listened to this stuff, recalled some things about that even one that happened today. I asked, I was on a Zoom call, and I asked people who were interested in music. This was the classical music group. How many of them knew anything new Braille music? And virtually none of them did, as near as I could tell.
Yep.
And I think that if there's anything about Braille that's even more downtrodden than Braille, it's Braille music.
And of course, the sad thing, Roger, is, as you well know, Braille music is truly the one component of Braille that's international, because virtually every country in the world uses the same Braille music notation, even if they have different notation for each of their individual languages.
And I believe Louis Braille's big thing was music, right?
It absolutely was.
Yeah.
So Thank you, Roger.
I don't know what to do about that, except that I'd like to see it noted somehow.
Yep. I think it's a good point. Let's consider, I'm not sure, we may have time before the 24th to do a resolution. Think about what you want to be put in it and give me a call or something, and I'll try to put something together, sir.
I think it's funny that I, who am not a Braille music user, seem to be the only one who's worried about this. I don't know. I hope that's not true. Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right, Albert.
Mr. Anderson, sir.
Got lots of hands, Paul. Albert, you're muted. All right, look. Deborah, we'll come back to Albert.
Albert.
Deborah, you're still muted.
There we go. Oh, man, Zoom wants to know all this junk about camera and blah, 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 blah. Anyway, okay, well, so I have to begin with a very sheepish confession, and but I hope I can redeem myself by following it up with something else. In 2016, you know, I live in Cincinnati, the home of Procter & Gamble, and I know a blind person, work with her on another board, an agency board in Cincinnati, who headed up this project. And, well, she actually was the Cincinnati cohort. The person who headed up the project was from the UK. And they came to my home and to consult me. And I kind of said everything that's in that resolution, that we didn't care about lines and bumps and that what was wrong with Braille. And I mentioned L'Occitane, that they put Braille on all their products. And if they can do it, why can't you do it? And there was just so much pushback that I confessed that I just kind of, you know, they asked for my opinion of the, they had some shampoo bottles and stuff with these lines and bumps and, Yeah, people can feel them and they can distinguish one from the other. And then, you know, now in my defense, this was shortly before my femur saga. So I think I just lost track of Kelly and the other one's name.
Right.
I just forgot about the whole deal. But I will say that it upsets me tremendously. And hearing your resolution, I'm just like, yeah, thank you. So I would just say that if we reach a point where you, I know the person to contact us if it's not too late. I mean, who did the presentation?
I think it was the lady from Cincinnati.
Really?
Yeah.
Susan.
The lady had a British accent, so she had come from the UK. But my understanding was that she had moved to Cincinnati.
Right. So that's the thing. My friend, I mean, she's not really a friend, but she's kind of a colleague. The blind person at P&G. Well, I think the UK person is low vision or something, too. But the person that I knew was more
interested in what I had to say and more sympathetic.
Right.
But I remember the UK woman being really domineering, and it's like, it's my way or the highway kind of thing.
Yes, I would accept that that's potentially possible. So thank you, Ms. Deborah.
Yeah. So let me know if, you know, I mean, are these products out now then? They're in
some,
the stores?
I think some of them are out there. They had samples that they allowed us to take home. Needless to say, I wouldn't take any home.
Did you have any samples of the shampoos that you had made with the Braille on the label, on the lid, to show them how it could be done?
I did. But I did not discuss it with them. I didn't think she was interested in hearing anything that I had to say.
Okay. All right.
Paul, you have
That's
6
my 2
hands.
Cents.
Very good.
So, Albert, are you able to unmute? If you're on a computer.
Am I audible now?
Yes,
you
sir.
Are, Albert. Yep.
Ah, thank you. Thank you. Good. Don't know what it is that gets in the way here with this program of mine, but at the end, I think it was at the end of the first resolution that you read, I think you said 1920s when it should have been 2020s.
No. What I was talking about was the era of the War of the Dots, Albert, when there was a big fight over whether we should use Braille or whether we should use Moontype or whether you should use New York Point.
Okay, that got away from me. Sorry. Out of the way.
But thank you, sir. I appreciate your listening carefully. And maybe I should make it clearer. By including a little bit of reference to New York Point and Moontype.
Okay.
So thank you.
All right, Debbie. Debbie Hill.
Debbie.
Hello there. Actually, you kind of answered part of what I was going to say, which is those products are, the resolution sounded like the products aren't out there yet, but they are. I have a bottle of Pantene in my shower that has the dots on it.
Oh.
So some of them are there. I just wanted to clarify, they said that 10%, only 10% of blind people read Braille. And you said, I got distracted by something here. Is that a true number? I mean, is that?
No, it's not.
Okay.
It's not. So it's a number that a lot of people have used. And I truthfully can't blame Procter & Gamble because it's a pretty widely held myth. But three people got together and did some research that was published in the Journal of Visual Impairment and Blindness about 2 years ago. And it traced where that 10% figure came from. And they made it absolutely clear that the figure had no place in reality whatsoever. And my issue wasn't so much that abstruse article was published, but the fact is, I was on an advocacy podcast that ACB did with the folks who wrote the article. So the leadership of ACB absolutely knew what that article indicated, and absolutely knew that the 10% figure was bogus. And so that's what kind of made me angry, because it wasn't that ACB didn't know, because they did.
Yeah, I'm with you on, you know, wanting more Braille, but I can see what the argument would be, that newly blind people aren't going to know Braille, and that they,
well,
those,
I mean,
simple...
the truth is we don't know what proportion of people know Braille. What I tried to do in suggesting the task force was to suggest that because the 10% figure isn't accurate, we don't really know how many people read Braille now. Clearly, NLS thought there was enough to set up Braille on demand and to provide electronic braille displays. And if there are, would they be doing that if there weren't very many people reading braille? There are an awful lot of displays that have been distributed already in this country. I don't know how many, but my whole point is that if we set up a task force, we can start to get some real information about some of this stuff instead of the stuff. And I think, by the way, that I read versions of these resolutions that aren't quite up to date, because the other thing that I incorporated in the revision that I sent in was another cool thing about trying to act now, is this appears to be the 200th anniversary of the time when Louis Braille invented Braille. Cool. So I think it'd be kind of cool for us to get involved in doing something with Braille as we celebrate the double century of Braille.
The other thing, just for folks that weren't at that meeting where we saw the demonstration and stuff, is I can't imagine how you would ever remember all those symbols.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, there were pages and pages
there were
of
eight,
them.
Eight pages of different symbols.
Different kind of symbols. And some of them kind of, when you saw them, you kind of went, oh, yeah. But most of them were like, to memorize them. Yeah.
Exactly.
Like, yeah. So.
Yep. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you, Debbie.
All right, area code 615, ending in 941. Can you tell us who you are, please?
Hi, this is Carol Francisco, and I'm not so sure how we do it or whether it's more appropriate for the teachers, but maybe somehow in that last resolution, we also ought to think about encouraging the training of Braille teachers, because we know that there's a terrible shortage. And a lot of our Braille teachers are older and they're retiring. So I don't know, maybe the teachers will handle that instead, but it certainly is an issue. And if teachers aren't available, then folks aren't going to be able to learn it even if they want to.
I think you make a good point. And I guess my feeling is that if we can get ACB to take the kind of leadership role that we're asking them to take, and if we can get other organizations involved, that would include AER. And that would include AFV, and that would include
our teachers group,
the Vision Serve Alliance, and if you get all of those people involved, you're going to get to the teachers. In AER, there are subgroups that deal with all of the blindness training programs. So my feeling is that if we can get this off the ground, we're going to get the kind of involvement that you're talking about, Ms. Carol. So at least that's my hope.
Me too. Thanks, Paul.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Alice.
Alice.
Thank you. And as a follow-up to the point which Roger was making about Braille music, I am one of those individuals who learned Braille music from the school in Winnetka, Illinois, that is unfortunately not offering a course in Braille music any longer. But on a more positive point, I wanted to mention that thanks to Valene Shaw and the East Bay Center for the Blind that is developing Braille courses, when those four initial courses were being discussed at one of the I Love Braille meetings several months ago, possibly at the end of last year, just in conversation at the ACB community call I Love Braille, there certainly was keen interest in one of the further courses of the East Bay Center to be one in music Braille. Now, as of right now, I don't think it's directly right there in the plans, but there was significant interest shown in Braille music being eventually
right.
One of those courses, and I certainly hope that it will be. Thank you.
Thanks, Alice.
Mm-hmm.
All right. 573, ending in 440. Can you tell us who you are, please?
Rick Andrus in Jefferson City. One very minor point near the end of the first resolution says something about raised shapes not being a substitute for Braille, and that's certainly true. But I was just thinking raised shapes in conjunction with Braille in certain contexts can be useful, but certainly not as a substitute. But my main thing, there was a contest a good couple of years ago, and I forget what magazine ran it, but it was supposed to, it had to do with suggestions for new Braille contractions, and they were supposed to be actually submitted to ICEB. And I wondered if you'd heard anything about that or whether they had any intentions of even considering any of that. For instance, a few things taken directly from grade three or a few user suggestions, which I had a few. I don't know how much interest in the Braille community there is in that. When I talked to Banna, though it was 11 or 12 years ago now, they said, well, people want fewer, not more. And I thought, really? But I understand why they knocked out the nine they did. But it seems like maybe there could be a few others if they'd consider them. And I wondered if they had.
So here's the good news, Rick. At our, and I'm stealing part of Denise's thunder, but at our Braille breakfast, which is coming up as part of the ACB National Convention, we've invited Judy Dixon to be our featured speaker, who happens to be chair of the International Council on English Braille. So what I hope will happen is that you will call in and ask her what they're doing about that.
When is that?
It will be in July during the convention on the Wednesday morning during the convention.
No, Tuesday
morning during Tuesday the convention. Thank you, Denise. Mm-hmm. So, but I will be sure that your question gets raised with her, Rick.
Appreciate it.
Thank you, sir.
Thanks.
Nice. All right, Dana.
Well, I went to Mexico 2 years ago because I couldn't afford dental work here. And I had a whole bunch of crowns put in. And I had to stop at the pharmacy on my way to the cross back over the border on foot, walking. And as I went into this pharmacy, they gave me prescriptions for pain and for antibiotics to take. And they had Braille labels on them. And that's just across the border in a tiny little dusty town that is made up of about 105 dentists.
Right.
You know, so if Mexico can mark their drugs, why can't we?
That I'm
doesn't
with you.
Make any sense. And it would save. And I have taught Braille to seniors before. Get them started by calling it survival Braille. You want to know what the buttons on the elevator say.
Yep.
You want to know, you want to be able to play a card game with your grandkids. You want to know how to write down a phone number so that you can get it back without carrying a lot of equipment around with you. You know, it's just plain common sense that if people have more places to use it, they will learn it. And a friend of mine at a convention who was a late onset blindness person, I think she was in her 20s, you know, one of those people that had to give up driving and all of that stuff, had a Braille note taker, and we were passing it back and forth between us, making jokes about the speaker. And she said that the note taker was so much easier than worn hard copy Braille that she was finding that she was really enjoying working with it and learning to use it. And, you know, that note taker went with her like everybody's iPhones do. So there is some benefit to all these e-readers because just I've got one on my lap right now and the Braille is much crisper and I can see that it would be easier for someone who's not had trained fingers to pick it up.
Yep, I agree with you. Thank you, Miss Deanna.
All right, area code 608 ending in 219. Can you tell us who you are, please?
Yeah, this is Peter Heidi.
I thought it was. Thank you.
Yeah. Paul, you're absolutely right that I was at the presentation as well, and the very first thing that people said was, well, you've given us these tactile things. Can you make them more prominent? And that Braille would give the prominence, and that and just because they think that blind people don't, that there aren't enough blind people that read Braille, does not mean that any company should contribute to the illiteracy of Braille of Braille users or blind people. It's not just that we're increasing the literacy rate for blind people, but we're increasing the Braille literacy rate of sighted people at the same time.
Right.
And that I was very saddened by the Procter & Gamble presentation. So I applaud your resolution. Thanks.
Thanks, Peter.
All right, Mary Lee.
From Michigan, I think.
Yep, she is. And she's still muted.
Miss Merrily.
Merrily, I just sent you an ask to unmute.
Hey. I'm not in Michigan anymore. I'm in Ohio, but that's okay. I'm still in Michigan. I'm
gotcha.
I'm just across the border in Toledo, and then I'm still a Michigander at heart.
Nice.
What I wanted to comment on, Peter, Heidi just mentioned, and another person also touched on, was dealing with the labeling from Procter & Gamble. If people have to learn these symbols, raised lines, dots, circles, or squares, and if they have to learn what they stand for, such as shampoo, conditioner, you know, body wash, why not just learn the Braille shape? They don't have to know Braille.
I'm with you.
Still learn that the SH contraction stands for shampoo. I mean, they don't have to even know that it's a, you know, SH contraction.
Yep. W
and
for wash.
And they maybe put it in bigger Braille, jumbo Braille, but as long as it's Braille. You got to learn all those dots and lines. Why not just teach the others the Braille?
Yeah, and one of the things we said in the revised resolution that we sent forward is there's a big difference between survival Braille and reading a book. And we're not asking that people are, that seniors learn to read a book. We're asking that they learn what Deanna calls survival Braille. And I think there are loads of people who can. Merrily, thank you so much for your call.
Hey, no problem.
All right, Steve.
Steve.
Well, Merrily said pretty much what I was going to say. So, but I'll just add, I'd love to see a resolve clause in the resolution that would encourage companies like Procter & Gamble to, you know, not to discourage them from making products available, you know, accessible to the blind, but do as the European Union does and put real Braille on it. And I think that needs to be part of the resolution, but I applaud you for writing it, and I'll definitely support it. Well, really, all three of them, but especially this one.
Well, I'll tell you why. I'll tell you why we didn't do that, or why certainly as the writer of the resolution, I didn't do that. I think that I have heard enough from ACB leadership and enough from companies, to suggest to me that right now there is this huge myth about the 10% deal that they think categorically makes providing Braille inappropriate and irrelevant, and they think they can teach the 90% of blind people to use all these shapes and crap. The fact is, we know they can't, and we know they won't. But my feeling was that until and unless we're able to put this task force together that starts to challenge that myth, and which also starts to demonstrate that there are a bunch of blind people out there who give a damn about Braille, we're not likely to have much of an effect on companies, because they're just going to fall back on the same crap that Procter & Gamble started with. That's why I think that objecting to the Procter & Gamble thing is only half of what we have to do. The other half is we really have to say to ACB, Braille is important to a bunch of your members, and you need to take Braille seriously, and you need to work with us to do something to fundamentally change the way it's being regarded by the general public. So that's why we didn't do it, and that's where the order's coming for me, Steve. So you may be right that we should try to include it now, but I think all that would do is it would essentially give them an argument they could use for not doing what we want them to do.
I understand, and you may well be right. I need to think about that one for a while. I'll just say one more thing,
sure.
And I'll shut up, and that is that, if we could make some argument, there's a lot of things happening with, phone security, and God knows the USB connectors on iPhones now. Great things start in the European Union, and Braille's
yes.
been happening there for a long time.
Over a decade. Yep. I agree. And that's what our resolution 2 years ago said. But what ACB said in response is they didn't want to deal with the government. They wanted to deal with manufacturers, and manufacturers didn't want to deal with Braille. And so essentially we got nowhere with it. So essentially I am being, I guess this year, a little less kind to the leadership of ACB because I think we're being ignored and undervalued as folks who use Braille, and it's got to stop. So anyway,
all right, you've got a couple more.
All right, we'll take two more and then we're going to move on.
All right, Kathy.
Kathy.
I just real quickly, I would really encourage the work to find out what that true number is, so the 10% myth can be dispelled. And I am one of those people that Deanna was referring to. I started off last year trying to learn survival Braille, and now I'm reading books. So,
nice.
And I'm in my 60s, so.
Kathy, we are truly impressed, and thank you so much for being a part of our group.
Of us that are learning late in our later years. There's a big bunch of us.
That is so excellent. And I guess what I would say is I am conflicted, and I'm talking as Paul Edwards now. I'm not talking as VRL. I am conflicted because we know what Braille can do. We know what it is. And for me, it shouldn't matter how many of us use it. It seems to me this is a civil rights issue. If people can identify products by looking at them with print, we ought to be able to identify those products by looking at them with Braille. And so part of me says that the other thing about the 10% number is it's basically an excuse that's being used by people to do nothing rather than a real objection. And the fact is we ought to be saying to folks, we are only asking for what everybody else takes for granted. So that's part of why I didn't include a lot in the resolution about trying to establish an exact number, because the fact is that schools aren't doing a good job of teaching Braille. A lot of younger folks are not learning Braille because they can use other technologies. But the fact is we know for sure that if you know Braille, you're much more likely to get employed and keep your job. And so it seems to me that what we have to do is to stand up for how important Braille is and not let people play numbers games with it. So, but that's Paul Edwards' opinion. That's not a BRL opinion necessarily. Miss Sheila.
All right. You've got a couple more, but one more is Ethel.
Ethel from Philadelphia. Miss Siegel, hello.
Hi. Interesting topic. Okay. Something for me, because I got asked to be part of an accessibility by Sony. They kind of put a call out. They were looking for blind people. Now, they didn't say anything about Braille. They just said they were looking for blind people to help them make their products more accessible. So, of course, I'm all about that. So I went, okay, I'll do it. And so emailed back and said, yes, I would be willing to do that. I'm totally blind. And they said, great. I got a call back and an email, follow-up email. And they said, okay, we're willing to pay you $200 and we will pay for your Uber, your transportation, however you want it. We'll pay for that there and back to home and back. So I said, wow, I would have done it for free as far as accessibility, anything, but let's do it. So anyway, I was a little surprised. I thought it'd be product, like their headphones or something, but it wasn't. It was all about what you're talking about. It was their packaging. So they had somebody, they wanted to videotape me, and the lady was there watching me, and she was giving me packaging, and she said, now we want to see how a blind person opens this package. I said, all right. So she goes, if you can just feel it, and can you tell me, you know, what you feel? And I'm like, yeah. She goes, do you feel anything at all on that package? And I said, yeah, there's some bumps. There's some little, and she's like, oh, you feel that? Great. And I said, well, yeah, I'm a Braille reader. I read Braille, so I'm very, you know, my fingers know that, and yes, and here's some lines, and here's some raised lines, and here's some, you know, a row of dots, and I'm going to follow it along, and then I'm just going to move along and open the package, and so, you know, I was a little puzzled, but it was just package after package doing that, and I would encounter dots, and I would encounter other times lines, and sometimes they were raised, other times they were kind of engraved. But, you know, she would watch me follow them, and then I would open the package. But they didn't explain anything else. They just videotaped it and just, I guess, wanted to see if I could find those.
Excellent. So, Miss Ethel,
anything about it. Yeah.
Miss Ethel, where are you from?
I'm here in San Diego. Sony has a big thing there in San Diego.
Yep. Mm-hmm. So at CSUN in California, mm-hmm. Sony and another company both showed a number of products that were specifically identified for blind people using dots rather than Braille.
Right.
Whether we like it or not, there are other companies who are jumping on the bandwagon of saying that Braille is irrelevant and not usable. And Sony is one of those companies. Ethel, we really appreciate you telling us about this and knowing what Sony is doing. Thank you very much.
It clarifies, this call clarifies it for me, because like I said, I walked away confused. They were like, very thank you, yes, you can feel it. And I was like, but they didn't say anything. I mean, I brought up the Braille, that of course I can, I'm a Braille reader.
We ought to have found another 500 of us who could get $200 each.
Right. Yeah, walked away shrugging, going, "Huh, that's strange, right?"
And then donated all to BRL.
That's right, Miss Essel. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Bye,
Miss Sheila.
Well, I lowered the other hands because they were repeats, and
good.
You have like 18 minutes. So
yes, I do. So we had a component. Which was supposed to be part of our program, because I wasn't sure how long these things were going to take. And that component had to do with some discussion that I wanted us to have. And I'm gonna read a little bit of what I sent out to folks so that you'll understand exactly where I was coming from. And I think what we're gonna do is postpone this until the next Braille Buzz. So what I said in my introduction is there's an old saying in educational circles that says, I taught it to him, but he didn't learn it. How often does this apply to Braille? So what I asked is that we could perhaps begin talking about how we learned how to be literate, what worked and what didn't work. The whole idea was I wanted to begin the discussion with those of us who are Braille readers to begin to at least consider what some of the elements we need to be championing as we are moving forward and trying to encourage better teaching of Braille, because I think an awful lot of people get discouraged from learning and sticking to Braille. Because of the way it's being taught, or because of the fact that very often folks will say, oh, Braille is so hard, you're never going to learn it. I mean, you're 70 years old, how are you going to learn it? I mean, people who are 10 years old and who are blind aren't using Braille. You at 70 certainly can't learn it. And when we start to begin with that kind of negative approach, it seems to me that we're making it very difficult for Braille. So what I'd like to do with everybody's, what I'm going to do, and I hope people aren't mad at me, is I'm going to postpone until the next Braille Buzz this discussion, and we'll make it the center of what we're going to do at our next Braille Buzz. We also have a component that's related to it that is part of our BRL program, and so we're going to hear about that in a moment or two. And in fact, I think we're going to hear about it now. So, Miss Denise Colley, president of the Braille Revival League, who now lives in Texas, but who cut her eye teeth in the state of Washington, tell us a little about our BRL program.
Man, Paul just got me all fired up. I am so excited about that task force. I can hardly wait. Anyway, this year, most of our convention program is going to occur during the virtual portion of the convention. It's always hard at the convention, the in-person portion of the convention, when you're trying to do hybrid stuff, and you can only have so many rooms and all of those kinds of things. And everybody is wanting to get the hybrid rooms. So we decided this year we would do more during the virtual portion. So on the 27th of June at 12:30, from 12:30 until 1:45, if those of you who listened to our Braille Matters celebration back in January, may remember that one of the pieces that we had was we had invited Rachel Antoine, who is connected with the Braille Challenge, with the Braille Institute in Los Angeles, spoke. And we wanted to go a little bit more into the Braille Challenge, what it's all about, and really talk about promoting it. So that's what we're going to be doing during that particular session. We're going to talk about what the Braille Challenge is and how it works. People are leaving and it's messing up my Braille.
Sarah, where are you? You want salmon or something? What do you want to eat?
We've got somebody that needs to mute. We're going to talk about how you participate, how kids begin in their local school districts through the international competition. And we're going to talk about the various ways that the categories and all of those kinds of things, and then how they compete in the final international competition. So, of course, Rachel is going to be with us. She is the director of the National and Youth Programs with the Braille Institute, and she's going to bring some of her staff that she works with to help share from their perspective. And if we're lucky, we may even get one of the winners from the most recent Braille Challenge that just occurred a few weeks ago. So if we can do that, that will be really exciting. On Friday, the 28th, from 11 a.m. until 12:15, we are going to be holding a presentation entitled How One Goes About Choosing a Braille Device. Trainer, not the Braille device, but how you go about choosing the trainer, the person who's going to train you. We're going to look at how you can find a trainer in the area, in your area of interest. We're going to look at giving you sort of a practical outline of the steps to go through to see how effective your trainer is, you know, and is going to be, and if they're going to be able to do a good job. So we want you to come and get all your questions answered. Our presenters for that particular session are going to be our own Paul Edwards and Mike Tindall, who is with Dream Vision. I will be moderating that small panel. So we're very excited about that. Immediately following that session, we are going to have our BRL annual business meeting. So those people who want to participate in the annual business meeting, and we hope a lot of you will leave that call, because that will be on an ACB Zoom account, and you will come onto this account that we have for our Braille Revival League that we share with Maryland. And you will come on that call immediately following. So at 12:30, we will be starting our annual business meeting. Because we are only able to have our business meeting until 1:45, because it backs right up to a session that the library users will be doing at 2 p.m. And we have a whole lot of BRL members who are also LUA members. We will be sending out an informational packet prior to the business meeting with the annual minutes, the treasurer's report. We have some constitutional amendments that we're going to be looking at. Any information that we want you to have ahead of time. And I said in my article that will be in the memorandum, and I probably will say it in several emails that I send out. Read it, read it, read it. Because we're not going to have a whole lot of time to be discussing all of this stuff during that meeting, and we want to get through our business. We will have elections. Our five officers are up for election or re-election. And so we want to have time to talk about elections and that process, and to pass the constitutional amendments. Paul already talked about our breakfast on July the 9th from 7 a.m. until 8:15. It's our regular, very popular Braille Revival League breakfast. And as he said, Judy Dixon is going to be our speaker. And we're really excited about what she's going to be able to talk to us about. That event will be hybrid. So those of you who are participating virtually we'll be able to participate in that call, in that session. Let's see, what else am I? Oh, we are going to be having a table at the ACB Marketplace on Monday morning and Wednesday morning. So come by. If you're at convention in person, come by the Marketplace table. We're going to be selling our game books and our refrigerator magnets. And if you have people who want to know more about BRL or Braille or anything like that, come by Marketplace. And then, because we want to have some adequate time to talk about our constitutional amendments changes, on the 21st of June, we're going to be holding a special meeting for BRL at 8 p.m. Eastern time to talk about the amendments. And we'll be going through them and reading them, doing the first reading and allowing people to ask questions, so that when you come to the business meeting, you'll be ready for the second reading and doing the actual passing or not passing of those amendments. So that's what our program will entail this year for convention.
And I think it's accurate, and Jane can correct me if I'm wrong, but for our constitutional meeting and for our business meeting, we're going to be using the same account as we use for the Braille Buzz tonight.
That's
so
true. Yes.
If you hang on to the information that you currently have for this call, it will get you both into our constitutional discussion and then 8 days later into our business meeting.
Can I talk about dues and memberships and stuff? Because in order
you
to
may.
Vote about the resolutions also, but also the constitutional amendments, you have to be a member of BRL. And I see some people here who aren't. Anyway, well, we'd love to have you join us. Membership in the Braille Revival League is $10 per year. And you could pay for as many years as you'd like to. We had one person just join for 10 years. Or you could do a life membership for $200, either in installments as you see fit or in one glump. All our memberships run on a calendar year, January through December, and entitle each member to receive the three issues of the BRL memorandum, which I think this issue in Braille is going to be close to a couple of hundred pages. So it's a big, resourceful publication, award-winning publication. We have six affiliates. So if you're in a state where one of those is, you can join through that, and you can always contact me and I can give you the information. Our affiliates are in New York, Florida, Pennsylvania, California, Illinois, and Texas. I did it. and
impressive.
I'm proud of you.
Yeah. Membership. The quickest way is to call me with credit card information or to go on our website, BrailleRevivalLeague.org. And on that website, there is a membership application, which will take you to PayPal to pay. You can do that. You could send me a check. We still do accept checks, cash, whatever. But those are the three ways. I'll give my contact information at the end.
It's 10 bucks a year, right?
10 bucks a year. Yeah.
Cheap at the price.
Really. And Denise mentioned that we do sell five game books. They are word puzzles. And the whole bundle is $25 for the whole, each book is $5. And we do have a refrigerator magnet that in Braille says Braille gives feeling to words. And we're taking a bunch of those to the convention to sell at the marketplace. And we've shipped four boxes of stuff down to my brother in Jacksonville, and they will cart them to the hotel for us. So contact information. You can write to us. I'll give you two email addresses. treasurer at BrailleRevivalLeague.org, or our new one is BrailleRevivalLeague@gmail.com. And we also, my phone number, 301-598-2131. We also have a groups.io list with several subgroups. One is for members only, and you can't subscribe yourself to that because I have to make sure you're a current member, and I can put you on that after you are. But there is one called Talk at BrailleRevivalLeague.groups.io that anybody can join. Anybody can talk about all things Braille. So you would send to talk plus subscribe at BrailleRevivalLeague.groups.io if you want to talk on that. We currently have 298 members, and our board has expressed the undying wish that this year we get to 300. We need two more. So those of you who aren't current members of BRL, we'd love to have you join us and get our award-winning magazine, The Braille Memorandum. And I think that's 301-598-2131. Feel free to give me a call. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Jane. And we very much appreciate all the folks who are members. BRL is one of the affiliates in the American Council of the Blind that has grown quite a lot over the past 3 years. And that's because of all of you. You valued what we've been doing. You value Braille. And therefore, you've chosen to become a part of what we do. And we need you and value you and want you. And tell your friends that it's a cool organization to be part of and make them join too. You know, if you need some help holding the gun, just let me know and I'll be more than glad to help you. I think that pretty much brings us to the end of this evening. I will take two hands if people have final things that they desperately want to ask or know, and then we're going to shut down and say good evening. So I will wait for about 15 seconds and see if anybody is desirous of becoming involved in asking a final question.
Agnes?
Ms. Ferris?
Yes. Is the program for the other reader, not the human more one, the other one, is that going to be in June?
It is. Jane, you're involved with that. Do you know the date yet?
I think it's June the 11th. Don't quote me, but it's the second Monday in June, and we are going to ask Anna Dresner to do that one again, as she did with the HumanWare
e-reader.
And this will be on the ZoomX.
I have the HumanWare, but I was just wondering, because I didn't know if it would interfere with the Braille Buzz or not.
It will not. Yeah. It will not.
Okay. Thank
it
you
will
much.
Not. But thank you for being concerned. If it had, I would have had to stamp my feet and get angry. So
yeah, that's right.
Luckily, I don't have to do that, Agnes. Thank you.
Yeah, yes.
Yep.
All right, Peter.
Peter. Suspense.
You're still muted, Peter.
Uh-huh. I'm sorry. It'll be June 10th if it's the second Monday.
Oh, thank you.
But that, what I was going to say is that maybe you want to help hold the stylus instead of the gun, that the stylus does Braille better.
Well, it does. and it also can inflict pretty substantial damage if you use it effectively. So
right, I mean, you can make your point that way.
Oh goodness, that's a very sharp comment, Peter. Thank you.
Thank you.
Oh, on that note.
Yeah, I think so.
That was rather pointed.
It was.
It were.
Thank you, Ralph. Do we have anyone else,
no,
Madam Sheila? Very good. So I would like to thank Ms. Sheila Young for jumping in front of the crowd and applying to be host of the Braille Buzz this evening. We truly appreciate all of your work, Ms. Sheila. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome.
And I appreciate Ms. Denise, who was part of this presentation this evening, and I appreciate all of you. Did you notice how many folks we had at the largest?
Yes, 45.
Thank you. So I'm excited about that. We often have more, but that's really when we're doing something that's perhaps more sexy and exciting than what we are doing tonight. But look forward to seeing everybody in June. Bring your ideas about how Braille ought to be taught, because if we're the people who ought to know, we're folks who are blind and we're the folks who use it. So I would love to have a discussion with all of you about that. In the meantime, keep reading, keep feeling, and recognize that Braille readers feel better. Good night, everyone.